the battles in this line. There's many times it seems that you're the only hope inside. Is it mine? Oh Lord, is it mine? When I never cease to wonder at the hope of this land, but it seems the time of sadness is time.
Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is Monday, October 13th, 2023. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live over a radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on a weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of a website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. You can also support us by purchasing the books Government by Consent and Court Access in the Common Law, also found on the right-hand side of a website. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on a donation tab, top right side of a website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week with our scripture reading. We're reading out of the First Corinthians. Let's see, First Corinthians chapter 10, I believe. Yep, First Corinthians chapter 10, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 10. Moreover, brethren, I would not that ye should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud, and all passed through the sea, and were all baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea, and did all eat the same spiritual meat, and did all drink the same spiritual drink. For they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with many of them God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now these things were our examples, to the intent we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. neither be ye idolaters, as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed, and fell in one day 23,000. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted, and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur ye, as some of them also murmured, and were destroyed of the destroyer. Now all these things happened unto them for ensamples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. Wherefore, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that ye are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it. Wherefore, my dearly beloved, flee from idolatry. I speak as to wise men. Judge ye what I say. The cup of blessing which we bless, is it not the communion of the blood of Christ? The bread which we break, is it not the communion of the body of Christ? For we, being many, are one bread and one body, for we are all partakers of that one bread. Behold Israel after the flesh. Are not they which eat of the sacrifices partakers of the altar? What say I then? That the idol is anything? Or that which is offered in sacrifice to idols is anything? But I say that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to devils, and not to God. And I would not that ye should have fellowship with devils. Ye cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of devils. Ye cannot be partakers of the Lord's table and of the table of devils. Do we provoke the Lord to jealousy? Are we stronger than he? All things are lawful for me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but all things edify not. Let no man seek his own, but every man another's wealth. Whatsoever is sold in the shambles, that eat, asking no question for conscience' sake, for the earth is of the Lord's, and the fullness thereof. If any of them that believe not bid you to a feast, and ye be disposed to go, whatsoever is set before you, eat, asking no question for conscience' sake. But if any man say unto you, this is offered in sacrifice unto idols, eat not, for his sake that showed it, and for conscience' sake. For the earth is the Lord's, and the fullness thereof. Conscience, I say, not thine own, but of the other. For why is my liberty judged of another man's conscience? For if I by grace be a partaker, why am I evil spoken of for that for which I give thanks? Whether therefore ye eat or drink or whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God. Give none offense, neither to the Jews, nor to the Gentiles, nor to the church of God. Even as I please all men in all things, not seeking mine own profit, but the profit of many, that they may be saved.
Okay, Jan, do we have any questions or any announcements? Well, before we go there, I just want to make a point that we do have the queue open. Everybody wants to get into the queue. If you're coming in on the phone, it's a star 6 and a 1. And on an app, there should be a join the queue or whatever it says there. Anyway, Jan?
Yes, we do have several questions tonight. The first one is, can NLA give an example of equity law for government which we, the people, do not have to obey, specifically a comparison between equity law and common law?
Well, equity is legislative law. And on the federal level, there are 57 U.S. Codes. I believe it's 57. And each one of them apply towards a particular government agency or some commercial activity. And so anyway, controls people who are in government and controls people who are in interstate commercial activity, whatever regulations might be imposed upon that. As for the people, of course, and the same thing as with each of the states, as for the people, of course, it's common law. And common law is really a construction of maxims, things that are clearly true. It's ultimately, it's really common sense if you really want to put it into a nutshell. Common law is simply common sense. And so we apply these truths, self-evident truths, these common senses, to build our case and to control that case. The rules of common law is common sense. And the law itself is common sense. There are certain principles in common sense, of course, that makes all the, you know, common sense in the world, of course. For instance, an individual who commits a crime without intent, okay, some whatever it is, they do something and it's wrong, but there was no intent, then there is no crime. And they may be held liable for whatever damages they may have done, but they can't be charged with a criminal offense. A lot of people are charged with criminal offenses and never committed a crime and sentenced to jail and so on and so forth. Of course, as we know, what was it, 1934, Rules Enabling Act, which came into play in 1938, which was really put together, of course, by the Bar Association, but it's claimed to be the Supreme Court that put this together as far as creating the rules, and the rules, of course, abrogated the common law, so they claim. Of course, they really can't abrogate the common law, but that's what they did, and they have the guns, they got the power, and we've been really kind of enslaved in our minds. We don't know these things, we don't look at these things, so, you know, we believe what we're being told is the law. That is not the law. We've been under civil law for quite some time. And civil law is a combination of everything. You know, of course, they use all the codes, they use different things to apply upon the people, and so on. But all that is unlawful. And the states have done the same thing. So we've been under civil law for quite some time in every courthouse in America, which creates a problem, by the way, when we get to the other side of things, because all these people that were convicted of crimes, ultimately, they were convicted in courts that were not courts of law. They really, you know, have been put into a situation that if they come to the knowledge of it, they can get a new case. A lot of people in jail don't belong in jail anyway. But anyway, it's going to become a problem when we get to the other side of devolution. So anyway, between equity and law, one is common sense, biblical principles, common law. And the other one, of course, is equity, legislative law written by legislators. And, of course, the authority we gave them to write those are limited. For instance, in a constitution, there are 18 powers for writing law. So that's the 18th power is actually the power to write law of the 17. So anyway, that's, I guess, about it in a nutshell.
Okay, next question. It is the responsibility of the sheriffs of every county in Texas, Arizona, and California to declare posse comitatus and activate all the local militias to repel invasion and insurrection to their states. What do you think would happen if the local militias showed up and started shooting all the foreign invaders? I think it would end the constant invasion.
Yeah, but that doesn't make it right. First of all, the sheriffs aren't educated enough to even know that they have such powers. They don't work collectively, you know, from county to county. Maybe a couple of them do here or there, but they don't do it in full force. They should be doing that. They should, you know, all the sheriffs come together yearly in each state, you know, like the Sheriff's Association, they meet, they have a conference and so on and so forth. But really, they should be really working together and discussing a lot of the things that they need to discuss, like what the common law is, what their powers are, what their authorities are, discuss some of the problems, what they can do to prevent the problems, discuss all the invasions upon the people by the federal government and even the state and how they can protect them. And there really is no need to bring together the a posse comitatus to go up against the problem we have in America. First of all, there's too much chaos to even put that together. It's not organized well enough. And again, the sheriffs are not educated enough. This is a military problem. The only solution is the military. We do know that the military is in play worldwide, not just here in the United States. This is many nations coming together to deal with the New World Order. And that's where we're at. So we need, of course, to step back and let it go. Can't go into the streets and just start shooting people. And even if these people are foreigners or aliens or whatever you want to call them, in causing chaos, unless they got weapons. I mean, look, if they got a weapon and they come up against you, you know, we defend ourselves. But other than that, we shouldn't be in taking things into our hands in that fashion. Again, we're not educated enough. Our sheriffs are not educated enough. We're not organized enough. We don't even understand who the enemy is. Yes, that's it. Jan, are you muted?
Yes, please explain further how Department of Justice and the American Bar Association concealed our courts of justice using Title 18 and supplanted the common law, claiming its jurisdiction to be the law of the land and court of record with Strack, Grand, and Pettit juries in 1948 by an act of the 80th United States Congress.
Well, the conspiracy has been here long before we even became a nation. Conspiracy goes all the way back to 1750 when the Bar Association was established in the colonies for the sole purpose of destroying our legal system and bringing us into civil law. And they've been working on that ever since, and they accomplished that goal in 1938 when they concluded it. Of course, you know, when the United States was incorporated in 1871, and then little by little, you know, it's just a construction. They've been constructing a statutory prison for the people for many years. But the Bar Association, of course, is the key to the whole thing, that they've put all this together and established, again, a statutory prison. It's under the rules that they've changed the law. What they couldn't directly change or destroy directly, that being the Constitution itself, over time they changed things little by little. And the rules of the federal courts, for instance, and again, even the state courts have all their own rules, so each state is individually has their own rules, and the federal rules of civil procedure, of course, is again the rules of the federal courts. And it is by rule that they destroyed all of our rights. Ultimately, they've abrogated the common law, they've abrogated the Bill of Rights, and they have changed everything. I think it's Rule 60 that abrogated all the powers of the sovereign in the courts where we can do certain writs. I just recently found that out because I had written some writs, and I've written writs before, but no judges ever came back to me that way, the way saying that, oh, no, that doesn't exist no more. That's been changed by Rule 60. I believe it was Rule 60. And when I went to read it, I couldn't believe they've even abrogated the right of writ by the sovereign. So they've taken all of our powers and authorities away. We go into courts and we're completely at their mercy. And they do everything they can to throw us out of courts if we're going up against the status quo. Or some protected individual. You know, the whole thing's a sham. All juries are stacked. They've been stacked for probably 100 years now. I know Lysander Spooner spoke about the problems with stacking jurors going all the way back, was it 1860s, I believe. So it's been a problem for a long time. They've been working here for a long time, and they've overthrown everything. The Bar Association is guilty of treason. All lawyers are minions of the New World Order. They created the political system that we're in. They divided us. Right against the left. They created the Republican and the Democratic parties. They kept slavery going and maintained that for the longest time. And then, of course, continued that separation, black against white. They destroyed our educational system. They destroyed our economic and our financial systems. They destroyed everything, literally. And it's time to take it back. I mean, you know, we do have a paper written that we've tried to get into the United States Supreme Court on two occasions. I've been blocked on two occasions by the clerk. But now that paper is kind of saved. We're updating that paper, and we'll be refiling it at a time when we can go, the other side of devolution. We might get a hold of JAG and, maybe use that part of the process, which is military justice. We'll see where we go with it. The Bar Association needs to shut down. The federal judiciary needs to be completely, all these judges need to be thrown out, and we need all new judges. Matter of fact, the lawsuit that we'll be doing is to sue both the Bar Association and the federal judiciary. That'll extend down into the state courts also eventually. But again, we can't do anything like that on this side of devolution because they've got the guns, they've got the power, they do whatever they want, and they make the rules up as they go. They give it different meanings. So it's pretty bad.
Okay, next question. Is there any educational information or documentation where we can learn about what the revocable common law living trust is all about?
Yeah, we've talked about this the last couple of weeks. It's under Education Starts Here, come down to the law. And when you come down to the law, you'll see court forms and processes. And there's only a couple pages on our website that you can't get to unless you're a premier member. And a premier member is someone who's given $5 a month or more. This is one of those pages. Maybe we'll just open it up one day. I don't know. Of course, we have certain courses that, we require people to be premier members in order to get into. But here's the page that you're looking for under court forms and process. So if you're a premier member, again, giving $5 a month or more, you'll see this page. Down on here, we talk, have information on creating both the revocable trust and irrevocable trust. So we have both here, common law trust.
Okay, does that include information on how to write it or how it functions and its attributes?
Yes, it's forms and everything. I strongly suggest that if you're going to create a trust, you need to read all of this information and get a good knowledge. There is a form that's set up that you can go right through and literally almost fill in the blanks. So it is pretty simple, but you should understand what you're doing.
Okay, what do you need to do to put a business or property under the trust?
Well, again, there's been got to be a beneficiary, and in order to create, there are different kinds of trusts, but if you're creating a common law trust, of course, there's a beneficiary, and so someone is a benefit of the trust, but doesn't control the trust. And of course, the plan of how the trust is executed is all laid out within the trust itself. Some of the most common trusts I think that you would be creating for a business would be, for instance, let's say you're an excavator and you got lots of machines. Machines are very expensive. I mean, $250,000 for a huge excavator, maybe, or for some D8 dozer or whatever, and different equipment. So if you have a lot of equipment and you're a contractor, you probably would be wise to move that into a trust or some kind of a protection so that the ownership is not directly connected to the contractor, so that they couldn't lose their equipment. And then they work a relationship of rental agreements between the two companies and corporations. I don't have enough knowledge to really lay that out. You definitely would want to talk with a lawyer who has background in that area. And remember, bar attorneys, of course, are the minions of the New World Order. They need to go. But some of the expertises that they have, for instance, certain lawyers might be expert in, let's say, USC 3. And I think USC 3 is for the president. I'm not too sure exactly which is which. Let's see if I can find that book here. Maybe I can find that quickly. Yeah, let's take, for instance, USC 3 is for the president. And that's like 1,000 pages or close to it, if it's 1,000. And so anybody that's going to be advising the president of the law, they need to know all of those codes within that USC 3. You know, and again, so each one of these different codes have a different application. Homeland Security is USC Title 6, for instance. Now, USC Title 18 is crimes and procedure, but of course that can only apply to the people operating within the commercial activities or people that are operating for some government agency who controls the agencies. USC 29 is for labor, and so on and so forth. USC 57 is for small businesses. And again, you know, there's lots and lots of codes, but we need lawyers that understand and master or expert in these different codes in order to advise, protect, defend, or whatever individuals that are operating under those particular codes. So, you know, certain knowledge a lot of these bar attorneys do have, they need to leave the bar, though. That's going to be a requirement. The other thing that needs to cease and desist in this country is the two-party system, or any parties. Parties are destructive to a republic. There is no need for a party. Parties are for democracies, and you know, where you come together as groups in order to defend something. But you know, you come. It's nothing. You know, you kind of sell your soul away when you join a party, so to speak, because sometimes you compromise your principles. If we were to send people into office, for instance, as legislators, and they didn't have any party affiliation, then there'd be no control over these individuals. And if we prevented them from taking any of that funny money, again, there'd be no control over these individuals, and they would be voting their conscience and obeying the law. And of course, if the people are on the ground, in the grassroots level, exercising their right of government by consent, then they'd be, you know, putting these people into office and taking them out when they break their oaths, or they start doing things that are leading them down a wrong path. You give them a warning, you tell them, you correct them, and they go the right way. That's never going to happen with party systems. It's never going to happen with a democracy. It can only happen in a republic where the people understand that, you know, we have to have a certain amount of education, which we should receive in our schools, of course, and that they have a duty to be responsive. You know, liberty is not free. It costs some of your time and a little bit of your money. Maybe not much money. If everything was put together correctly, it's pretty much just your time. But people are ignorant to that. You got to keep the slave simple, you know, stupid. And that's where we're at. We're enslaved by the New World Order, whether we know it or not. And it's through ignorance that they beat us all the time. And if people think, you know, a lot of people I see on the grassroots level, they're trying to do something, maybe try to put people in office, try to do certain things with the school boards or town boards or different things. Well, look, if you don't know the Constitution and you don't know the common law and understand due process, if you don't know those things, then you're as big a problem to the system as they are. Because you're only acting in ignorance. Also, if you don't know these things, how can you know when they're breaking the law? How can you know when they're violating their oath if you don't understand their powers and authorities? So, again, you know, we have a lot of work to do once we get to the other side of devolution. You know, we have to work through the schools to bring a proper education, to bring our children back under morality and away from the craziness that they put together. But we also have a lot of people who have already been through schools that have to be somewhat re-educated if they're willing to do it. That's kind of problematic. But that's up to the people in the grassroots level to take care of their own business within their own communities. You know, you come together on a county level, and each one of the towns and villages and different and cities within that county, you know, they all have their own particular problems, but you have to work together to solve those problems, and you have to work together to re-educate the public. You have to try to entice them, to bring them in, to understand the need for the re-education. Because as Jefferson said, you know, if a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. Forget about it. It's not going to happen. And that's why it's not happening now, and it's not going to happen after, unless the people get educated. Therein the purpose of NLA.
Okay. Are there any general dues and don'ts
in the
common law trust?
I don't know offhand of any dues or don'ts. I guess don't lie. You know, be honest and just in what you're putting together, and you know, and be careful putting it together. There's got to be a beneficiary. It's got to be officers of the trust. They're called trustees. Should be at least two of them, I believe. And it's got to be real, you know. I guess that's about it. I don't know of anything else. Read through the paper. You read through all this stuff, and you'll come to a pretty good understanding.
How do we amend when changes need to be added, and where can we file those changes?
In the trust? Is this still a trust question?
Yes.
Well, again, the person who put the trustee together, if it's a revocable trust, which is what should be created, a revocable trust, the person who initiated the focus of the trust, and they don't partake in that, they can change the laws, they can change the bylaws. Once a trust is established, and as long as it's a revocable trust, again, you can shut the trust down, you can make changes. Irrevocable trust, I'm not too sure how that would work out. If it's, for instance, I just was involved with I'm involved with a court case right now with a trust, and where the trustee violated the trust by exposing private personal information and actually giving an individual's monies away to an outside entity. And this was a government trust. It was a irrevocable trust. It's a trust put together in New York State for all people employed in New York State. And the trustee, the trustee, which is the goodness, which is title, not the county, it would be the state controller. The state controller is the trustee of the trust. So once an outside entity such as the IRS, for instance, came to try to seize the money of an individual who's receiving money from that trust, that was a violation when they even exposed the fact that, yes, the individual does have an account here, does receive money, you know, he's retired and he gets X amount of dollars and here's his social security number, give him all this stuff. All that's a violation of the trust, okay? I think in this case it becomes a crime too. But anyway.
Okay, new topic. How can my husband get his courts changed to the common law jurisdiction because he is a secure party creditor?
I don't know. I need a lot of information. Is he a defendant or was he the plaintiff? Do we know that?
No, this is all I have on that question, John.
Is it criminal or civil? Do we know that?
No, I do not.
Then I can't say anything. I don't know. You know, first of all, you always want to be the plaintiff. And if someone sues, you want to countersue, and you want to move it into a court of record, which is a common law process. And you kind of want to put certain things in there. I've learned over time that you want to stay away from certain phrases and certain things that reveal what you're doing and just go straight constitutional. And that kind of, kind of gets them stuck between a rock and a hard place, at least in their own minds and hearts and souls. They may still do the evil thing because that's what evil people do. And the court is filled with devils, in my opinion. They're just, all in it for the money. If you think your lawyer's on your side, in most cases they're not. And they will sell you down the road in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat, they'll save their own rear end before they'll save yours when the judge comes and lays the law down, which is not the law of the land, which is not the common law, which is the law that the judge wants to apply in that case as he makes it up or silences an individual from bringing certain things into the court. You can't say that in my courtroom. You can't bring that in my courtroom. You know, one of the things in the rules is the rules of evidence is involved also in the rules. And that is created in order to get rid of evidence that they don't want to be seen in the court. It's a real horror story in the court, and anybody that's not in the courts don't understand that and may not realize that, and may not even believe it. But I'll tell you, I know firsthand, it's run by the devil, in my opinion.
Okay, new question. How can I void an abstract of judgment? It's a lien on my husband, it's illegal, and he never knew about it.
Well, I've never looked at it. I'm not sure exactly what an abstract of judgment is. Do you know, Gerard? Does anybody else know here what an abstract of judgment is? I'm not sure what that is.
I never heard of it.
I've heard abstract, of course, and I don't know what that means. I'd have to look into it to try to figure it out. Not that I can give really great advice on that. And again, any thoughts or ideas that I might give to somebody, certainly hope that they understand what they're doing and that they understand how due process works within the court systems. Because if you don't know that, you're in trouble and you're not going to win. No matter how strong your case is, you're guaranteed to lose. You have to understand what you're doing. Sometimes it might even make sense to hire a lawyer sort of as a second seat, if you want to call it that, where they're really there to advise you, and you might allow them to speak from time to time, but you're the main speaker in your court case. And that could, that could be advisable, bar attorneys, I don't trust them as far as I can throw them. But they can have some good advice, if you think you need it. But if you don't understand the system, you're going to be in trouble in the court.
What was the question, John? I just walked in.
Read that again, Jim.
Hold on a second. I'll have to get it back here. How can I void an abstract of judgment? It's a lien on my husband, and it's illegal. He never knew about it.
Yeah, I don't know what an abstract of judgment is. So a lien, I understand a lien. There's mechanic liens, and then the only lien that you can place on an individual or on a piece of property or something, actually a piece of property, not on the individual themselves, but you can place a lien is a mechanic's lien without having to go into court. But you have to get in, to make it a solid lien, you have to get it into the court. But that lien has to be, I know in New York, the law, I believe, is 8 months. You have to renew it. And as long as you continue to renew it, I don't know if there's an extended time of being able to renew liens that are mechanic liens. But other than that, all other liens have to go through due process, which means you've had your day in court.
But if you didn't know and you didn't show up, then they got a default judgment on you, which is usually what happens.
Well, and again, maybe they don't want you to know, and I don't know how all that works. Again, we get people in the courts.
And we know that they go 5 years and then they renew it, if it's a property lien or a money lien.
Right, and that's a different kind of lien, and they're supposed to, it gets back to due process before they take that. So there is a due process.
And again,
the due process that you're talking about is an unlawful due process because it's usually a non-judicial due process. In other words, it is a facade there. It makes it look like it's going through the courts.
On a tax lien, it's non-judicial, but if it's a bank against a person or a debt, it is judicial. They go in front of a judge. Oh.
Not if it's a mortgage, okay?
A property,
okay, is one thing, and you'd be right on that. But if it's a mortgage on the property, that brings a whole new entity, and it brings the government into play. It brings your SESQ account.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I just,
Yeah, I know, but you're right on the property. If you're using a piece of property in order to get a loan out, that's a different story.
They can force you to sell that property to pay that off unless you put your house under the Homestead Act, which is very easy to do in New York State. We have what they call the Homestead Act. Lots of other states have that, where if it's your principal residence that you're actually residing in, they cannot take it as long as you don't have an inordinate amount of equity built up into it,
Yeah, well, once you're under the Homestead Act, yes, they can't take you home, but there are certain qualifications, of course. It's got to be the home you're living in. That's number one.
Right.
Home number two. If you took a loan, I don't think you can really get a loan on that kind of a loan, on a mortgage. You can get a second mortgage, which, again, brings you back to the Fed window, which, again, attaches to the SESQ account, which plays that stupid game that they put together in the late 1800s.
Well, if you've got a debt and you defaulted on any debt, I don't care if it's credit card or bills that weren't paid, and you have equity in your home, they can force you to sell it to pay the debt. Hospitals can do it with bill. With I mean, health bills are a little different, but they still can take your house.
They have to go to court, though.
Yes, they go to court. Yeah, a lot of people don't respond, and they get what they get they get a summary judgment because you didn't respond.
Right. Well, I agree on that. Sure. I mean, if you don't respond, of course you default, and it is true that you have to, again, in order for anything to apply, you have to have due process. You cannot take your property without due process. I mean, and one of the key things, you know, when opening a court of record and focusing in on the common law is Amendment 7, where that's what I've rested on in a case just recently, and I pushed that more than talking myself about this is under common law. I just use, look at we're under, this is what we're underneath. In suits of common law where the value of controversy exceeds $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved. That makes it, to begin with, a common law process. But, of course, juries are tainted. But it goes on, and no fact tried in by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. So, again, you're back into the rules of common law, not the rules of civil procedure, federal civil procedure, or the state's rules, and so on and so forth. All those other rules, again, they all got to go. If America is going to be real, if we're going to take America back, it's not just seizing and getting rid of these people and seizing the properties and seizing our government and taking it back. We have to put statesmen in place, and we have to be watching them on a constant basis. That requires people to spend a couple of hours a month. Many hands make light work. You got 200, 300, 400, 500 people in your committee of safety on a county level. It's very little work to do. You know, you do this to make sure this is done, and it take you an hour sometime or two sometime during the month. And then you come together, bring your information. It's collectively digested by the committee. Eventually, the whole, you know, whatever it is that they're looking into is completely digested, and they bring it before the full committee, and they bring it to a vote and do whatever it is that they got to do. But if we're not doing that, then we don't have government by consent. And we're not doing that. That's the problem. You know, you can't, liberty is not free. And, you know, our heritage is in the law, okay? And our heritage is liberty. That's what we inherited. We inherited liberty. And if you don't know your heritage, if you don't know, and liberty is being in the law, if you don't know the law, you don't know your rights, you don't know your liberties, you don't know anything. Everything's a guess off the seat of your pants. The only thing that has made America to survive as long as we've survived is because we have received our liberty and our understanding of freedom through osmosis. But that's almost died out. Our children today don't seem to be receiving that, nor are they receiving patriotic hearts. And that's because we're too darn lazy. We know now, those who hear know, but they're still not doing, you know. That's the problem. And as long as we're not doing, well, we don't deserve either, do we? We're going to lose it. And it doesn't matter what the military does. It doesn't matter what Trump does. If the world continues on after this, it won't be long before it's stolen again unless we exercise our right of government by consent. That requires an education. We can do that, and we can train our children in the schools. So as they grow up, they know automatically these are the things that's normally done. Train up a child on how they should walk, and when they are older, they will not depart from it. That's a promise. That's a biblical promise. All right. You got anything to add to that, Gerard?
Well, okay. Do you, Gerard?
Okay.
If not,
move on.
Next question. I have been instructed to use the following whenever I am coerced to sign documents so as not to give up my rights. I use it on 1040 information forms to exempt myself from withholding on lease agreements and so forth because I've had issues with my property manager over their lease violations. They said, well, you signed it. but the person did not include the statement. So I guess the question would have to be, is there a statement you can use in that situation so you don't give up your rights?
Well, again, what contract did they sign into that?
Well, lease agreements, and they use it for withholding.
Well, look, so a lease agreement is an agreement. You either agree or not. Some leases are against the law because they're totally unrighteous. I don't even know if they apply that anymore. I know years ago they did. Contractual-wise, I've been in contracts that were unlawful, especially when I was younger, and where the other side padded the contract so severely, and it's just unlawful. So that to some degree, contract law, to some degree, is protected by the state or by the government in the sense of governing it to a degree. But when you come to, the right of contract is a right. It's an unalienable right, the right to contract. That's one of our most strongest rights, is a right to contract. And so if you sit down and you're willing to give this up for that, and they're going to do this, and, whatever the agreement is, you're signing into it, unless it's repugnant. If it's repugnant to the law, then, of course, pieces of it can be extracted out. Possibly the whole contract could be voided out at that point. So, again, it depends on what you're signing. As far as anything else is concerned, especially working with paperwork for the government, and I want to tell you, I can't believe how fast the government has moved on this woke thing. I mean, I just can't believe it. Just today, I filled out some papers for someone to go register a car, and already they want to know what your sex is or what you want to be called, I think, now. They don't even use the word sex, I don't think. You got male, female, or other. The government has moved real quickly with this. I've seen this in Social Security. I see it with the department, the DMV, and other places. Already everything is in the game. But the thing is though, you cannot sign away an unalienable right. So I would, putting that on a piece of paper doesn't really mean much, and it's not going to mean much even in an agreement like a lease or an agreement of some kind of a contract. The thing is if that contract violated an unalienable right, it's null and void. It's like the fruit of the poisonous tree. You see, the thing is unalienable means it can't be sold, taken away, given away, exchanged. It's there. You either exercise it or you don't. But it can't be taken away from you. So you can't give up your rights. Okay. Now, it is true, you can give up your right in the sense of, you want to plead guilty and you want to, give up your right to the trial or something like that. But even there, there's a problem. You see, if someone goes in and pleads guilty, it's not up to the prosecutor and the judge to decide anything. You still have to go before a jury, and the jury's got to hear the whole thing, and they got to make the decision. Only the jury has the ability to take away your liberty. Only the jury has the ability to decide the law, the facts, and the penalty. Okay, they get to decide law. So if the law and the facts is already put to bed and there's an agreement, yeah, I did it, I confess, blah, 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 blah. Okay, well, now the jury's got to hear the whole game plan, see what went on, what took place, consider mercy, and then apply justice as they see fit. Even that is not properly done in our courts. Our courts are a mess. It is a total abortion. It's a mess.
Well, that's all, John. There are no more questions.
Okay. Okay, anybody wants to get into the queue? We're going to go in a queue, answer some questions in the Q&A in a minute. We do have two people in the queue. Anybody else wants to get in? *6 and 1 on the phone, and there should be a button to get in if you're on an app or a browser. But before we get started, there's something I want to talk about. I know I talked about this before, I think. I think I talked about this maybe on the first Monday of the month when we came together with the Committees of Safety. But I want to bring this up again. This is extremely important. I think everyone should join this. It doesn't cost a dime. But at some point in time, you'll put a little time into things for whatever it is within your potentials, I guess. But this is a website called... welcome to Our Country, Our Choice. Okay? Our Country, Our Choice. And Colonel Douglas McGregor. Now, if anybody is aware, not aware of General of Colonel Douglas McGregor, you definitely need to look into this guy. He was an advisor for Donald Trump. He's become very, very involved in talk. Every day he puts out a report. I mean, every single day he talks about what's going on in the world, gives it from a military perspective on what's really happening around the world and how things actually work and what's really going on, in the Middle East or wherever. But anyway, he was asked to be a CEO of this company. And let me play the video, and then we'll talk a little bit about it. Then we'll go into Q&A. It's only about 2 minutes long. It's not long at all.
Thank you for taking the time to review our message. I'm Douglas McGregor, the Chief Executive Officer of Our Country, Our Choice, a nonpartisan organization that promotes traditional conservative values in American government, as well as prosperity at home and peace abroad. I'm speaking to you today because America confronts its biggest crisis since World War II. However, this time, the existential threats to the American people are not thousands of miles away on some foreign battlefield. The threats are here at home. Some call the threat the deep state. Others point to the swamp. Regardless of what we call them, the threats from political corruption, deceit, and the collapse of integrity in American government are real. Our country, our choice, consists of Americans like you, people who know the swamp in Washington, D.C. is too deep and too wide for any one man or woman to drain. Our country, our choice, is building the platform and the tools Americans need to drain the swamp. We are launching our service in the fall, and our service is free. Our country is in free fall. It's time to fight back. Americans' traditional values of God, country, and family are under attack. If you love our country, please join us. Our country needs you. Together, we can change the destiny of our nation. Let us show you how. Email us at ourcountryourchoice.com. Thank you, and God bless you.
Okay, if you go out to the website here, ourcountryourchoice.com, and you go over here to volunteer, this is to sign up. You can sign up as an individual. NLA has signed up as an organization. I do believe that they assist people with funding, too, if they have a good program. They are looking for organizations, and we've been looking for funding for quite some time, of course, because we're not going to really be totally successful until we go professional. And so we need to go professional. We've been looking for money. I think there's a potential of getting money from this particular organization because that's what they're doing. They're looking for good, solid programs that are out there that could be effective, well put together, and they will assist us in any ways and get the word out and potentially find us funding. Again, we'll see what happens with that. But nevertheless, it definitely is a good place to be. Again, combining, we are National Liberty Alliance, so we do want to align with others. We definitely feel strong about aligning with this particular organization. I do believe that Colonel McGregor I don't know this as a fact, but from listening to him, he just kind of surfaced about 3 weeks ago, and he's putting out reports on what's going on a daily basis. I do believe he's part of the plan. He's come out at a time to educate people, because that's what he's doing. He's educating people. So we're putting those reports out. And then with this organization, it's great. Now, if you sign up as an individual, which most people will be doing, in your you get a place where you tell a little bit about yourself and what your strengths are, and they try to bring people together that share the same strengths or things that they focus in on, and to be able to work together, maybe lead you to this organization or that organization, or to build a new organization, a group of people, whatever the case may be. However that's working out, I don't know. But the thing is, when you do sign up as individuals, we do ask that maybe you make the point or the note that you're with National Liberty Alliance and what it is that we do. you know, the more people going in there referring back to National Liberty Alliance, then the more opportunity of hearing about NLA and for them to come out, take a look, see what we're doing, and understand that we are here to educate the people and that people cannot have government by consent without a proper education. And that's what NLA does, gives the proper education for the people to have government by consent. So I do believe that any organization that could assist us and lift us up in ways and help us to become, you know, to do what we're doing, you know, to get the word out. I think if they come out and take a look at our website, see what we're doing, I think they'd agree quite quickly that we offer this proper education. So again, everyone should join them, okay? Then it'll be a while, but they'll send you a video here or there, a message. You know, you don't get much information from them, at least not in the beginning. They still are in the organizing kind of stage, and they say it may be a little slow getting back to you, but they're working on it, and as they're bringing these things together, they will get back to you, they will make a connection with you, you will get more information, and hopefully everybody will step up and do whatever it is that they can do to save our republic. Of course, you know, your education is here at NLA, and we certainly hope that you get that education, and we certainly hope that you build your committees of safety, join together with other people in your community to do so. All right, let me see if there was anything else I wanted to make a point on this. Well, I know on YouTube, let's see, there it is. He's got a YouTube page, okay? People should go out here. Douglas McGregor and then Colonel. That's what it is at youtube.com at Douglas McGregor Colonel. And then you can, you know, kind of subscribe to his page and you'll get his daily, you know, things that he puts out. They're not long, usually a half hour, 20 minutes long, I think. You know, 23 minutes, 20 minutes, 20 minutes, 25 minutes. So it's good messages. It really keeps you informed. It adds to what you're learning from SG or from, and also from X22. They all are very consistent between themselves. They harmonize very well in the sense, knowing through harmony, because truth is self-evident and it will harmonize. So you'll see, it really works out well. I do believe he's part of the Q plan. This was his time to come out and do something like this. So everybody should get involved. Okay, with that, we're going to go over to questions. Again, anybody wants to get into the queue, *6 and 1. If you're on a phone, and there should be a button to get into enter the queue if you're on an app or a browser. Okay, we'll take our first person question. David Smith, it looks like. You got the mic. David, what state are you from?
Hey, John, this is Dave Smith in Washington State.
How you doing,
Dave? I have a question in regard to the Committee of Safety. The first one is, in Washington State we have 39 counties, and I can't seem to find a location where it shows which of those counties have a Committee of Safety, because I'd like to visit some of them and talk to them. And I haven't been able to find any list. I went to the 10 districts, and then the list that down below where they have the different states, and I went into the Washington State, and I only found one in King County, and I couldn't find any other counties that were organizing a Committee of Safety in those 39 counties.
Okay, yeah, well, you know how to get to where you gotta go, then, you know, there's 459 members in that state, okay, and as you mentioned, there's 39 counties. Okay, we only have one county that has done anything. All three individuals seem to be working in King County.
Okay. The other thing I found out, John, well, first of all, before I say any more, I want to congratulate you and everybody that's working on this. And it's amazing, and the information that you're providing and the service that you're providing. And I know that it's discouraging at times because people make promises and they don't follow through. But I want to compliment you guys on this. And I don't know where I'd go if I didn't have you guys. So anyway, my other question is...
Before you go on to the next question, one of the things you might want to do you know, what county are you in?
I'm in Pierce County. So yes. I'm trying to get set up and get everything, follow the procedure to get my committee of safety set up there.
Okay, if you contact Jan, okay, if you sign up for that county here on this page, you can sign up on this, well, actually go to the page before to sign up. You subscribe to the group if you're already, you know, if you're one that has started, I believe. In any event, if you're going to start one, you should sign up, put your name up here. We only put your county first name and your phone number. That's it. But then you get a hold of Jan, and he'll send you the list of all 459 members in your state. And they'll be broken up by county. That's correct, Jan. They're broken up by county, aren't they?
Yes.
Yeah, I can send them by county.
And we do. Unfortunately, King County, the one that you do have listed,
mm-hmm.
they just changed the sheriff from an elected position to an appointed position.
Yeah, that's a plague in the United States. We do have numerous states. Well, not a lot of them. Connecticut, I know, has no sheriffs. We've lost seven sheriffs in here in New York. And there are various other places, let's see, Hawaii has no sheriffs, and Alaska's never had a sheriff. I think Hawaii had elected sheriffs in the past. I really don't know for sure. That is something that we will be looking at and working on the other side of devolution. You can't have a court of law without a sheriff. The sheriff is required to execute all of the necessary warrants and different things, seizures, that kind of thing. The sheriff is there to protect. The sheriff is there to run the prison. The sheriff is there to oversee, ultimately, the juries, too, to some degree. And without the sheriff, there is no common law, and that's a major problem. So there's no law enforcer in that state or county, whatever it might be. So all of Washington, this is the case? They got rid of sheriffs, or just in your county?
Yeah, here's an observation that I've made. I have contacted different community or committees of safeties in different areas that's listed on your map there, because there was only the one I found in Washington. And here's what I found. I find that there a lot of them are off in the left field. You know, we're trying to solve problems of their own and having court issues and everything. And it seems that they're spinning their wheels because they seem to be going in the wrong direction. A little bit of
knowledge is dangerous, and that's the problem. They get a little bit of knowledge, and they go off on their own, and they think they can accomplish it without knowledge. And particularly what we're doing here as Committee of Safety, there's a process, there's a procedure, there's a plan. And operating that plan also is the way that committees operate. There is a process how committees operate. And they take in shortcuts. And that is one of the problems we're having. And we have to go professional in order to deal with this problem, because we don't have the people to make the phone calls, to help the people, to correct the people. And if they're totally lost and going in a direction that could be damaging to other people, where they'd be affecting other people's rights and stepping on toes and doing all the wrong things, okay, well, then we want to cut ourselves away from them and start a new committee of safety that will act honorably. You know, it's a wrongdoing for us to tell people to go create committees of safety and then not lay out the process, because then everybody will be doing their own thing. And there are a lot of committees of safety, I think, there are some anyway, that are just doing their own thing. We were very careful in putting our program together and laying this out, because under Starter Committee of Safety, we have the page of the handbooks. And on those, and we have these handbooks, and they're all free. They're all downloadable PDFs. You can buy the handbook, put it in your shirt pocket if you want, for $5, $6, whatever it is we're charging there. But, how to organize a Committee of Safety organizing handbook.
Yeah, you got it all there. You know, you're right. Hey, yeah, I just want to add one more thing that I've mentioned before. But as the U.S. Marines, 70 years ago, fighting in South Korea for their freedom, and this is not what I put my life on the line for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this
well,
is...
absolutely. You're right. You're right. 100%. But again, until we take it back.
At 90 years old, I'm still fighting for yours, mine, our children, and our grandchildren.
Well, amen, and thank you. So
hey, God bless you for what you're doing. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Okay, we'll take our next caller. Let's see.
Hey, John, real quick. I don't think he answered your question about, was it just King County? Because I think he was suggesting or saying that it was just King County, and I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Was it just King County, David?
The only one I found on the list was King County.
No, okay. But I mean as far as losing the sheriff is concerned.
Pardon me?
Is there more counties in Washington?
Yes, in Washington.
So every county, every sheriff in Washington is no longer elected?
Oh, no. Just, King County is the only one that I know of of the 39 counties that is not elected. And I used to live in King County, and I have property in King County. So I'm really upset about that because I'm getting all kind of trouble from the code enforcement officers.
Well, you see,
so that's where Seattle is, right?
Yeah, that's in the Seattle area.
Okay, so
they're really tormenting me in regard to some property I own there, and they won't even let me put a car on it.
So they're starting with the city center, and they're going to probably try to branch out and get to every other county. All right, thank you. Thank you for answering my question. I was just curious.
Yeah, I think that's the first move. They're going to try to get other counties to get the sheriff out of there and have him appointed instead of elected.
Well, here again is a sad situation. You got three people that signed up for King County. Obviously, they're not coming to the meetings. Obviously, they're not coming to our special monthly meetings, which is the first Monday of the month, where we try to focus on some kind of a subject matter that we need to talk about nationally. People need to make decisions on how to approach that particular problem from their own perspectives. And we'll offer solutions, and you know, they're free and independent to do what they want. But look, if you're going to do something, you need to educate yourself. You need to organize properly. Now, if these people were coming to our meetings, then they would know that we're in the courts and we're doing things. Dealing with the sheriff is a priority of ours. We might be able to help them to get their sheriff back. Because whatever...
They had a meeting at a restaurant, and there was about eight people there, so they have enough people there to form a committee of safety, but I got the impression that they haven't formed a committee yet.
Yeah, well, they probably haven't. They're probably just in an organizational... But the thing is they're not educating themselves, it seems like. Okay, again, you would think at this point they'd be coming up to our meeting and saying, and when a Q&A opens, to say, hey, look, you know, we lost our sheriff here. Is there anything we could do about this? You know, he's not elected. You know, we'd look into that a little bit, see what we can do, if we can do something, or at least make the plan to get the sheriff back in the future, because we are going up against these people to bring sheriffs back every place that they've been removed and places that they've never been, like Alaska, okay? So we need to have our sheriffs. Without the sheriff, there is no law. It's a lawless area, you know, and you take, for instance, in Connecticut, the sheriff, I believe, is appointed by the governor, I believe. Let me think about that. I'm not sure. I think the governor appoints them. So who do they owe their allegiance to but the governor? If they're not going to be obedient to the governor is going to fire them because he could fire. Okay, if they're elected, you know, you can thumb his nose at them and do the right thing and execute the law, and not the will of a governor or some other individual who is destructive in our government. But again, you know, look, you can't form a committee of safety without knowledge. You know, and again, you need to understand the plan and how we're going to take America back. The most important thing that we need to do is to start with our children. We need to take our schools back, and that's the first committee other than the Committee of Correspondence, which becomes a committee to some degree once they sign up, so someone is a contact person. And you don't need any more than two or three people in that Committee of Correspondence. You don't need a lot of people. But the thing is your education is what the whole committee should be focusing in on, and taking back our schools by visiting the boards. Matter of fact, on our next first Monday of the month, we're going to be talking about how to take boards back, whether it's a town board, a village board, or a school board, and how to force them to be obedient to the law, to the people. And so we're going to lay that out. And what happens when you do that, we're also going to show you that every time you visit a school board You know, there's preparational work to be done. You have to have a couple of meetings. You have to talk about it. You have to invite the community within that particular school district to that conversation. Invite them to the board meeting. Ask them to back you up. It's their children. They should be backing you up. I think you'll get lots of people. If there's, let's say there's 3,000 people in that particular community, I'll bet you every bit of 300 people will show up because they're connected in one way with children, grandchildren, or whatever. You get 300 people plus whatever you got in your committee of safety going to that board. They won't even have enough room to allow all these people into the thing. You'd be standing outside, some people. But the point is, you'd overwhelm them. And the power and the authority working with the sheriff. We're going to lay this whole thing out on how to do it. The sheriff's the one that's going to serve the papers on them. The sheriff's that's going to be one ultimately remove them lawfully. And the people will then seize control of those seats, at least temporarily, look for another election or whatever they want, where they can hold. I'm not sure how that works on that. I think Gerard might have some information on that. I'll talk with him about that to learn something about it. But the bottom line is taking back the school boards. Now, what do you think? All these people that come to that particular meeting for that school board, let's say you get 300 people or 100 people. Let's say you get 100 people there. I'll bet you every bit of maybe 10, 20, 30, 50 people, whatever, the more people that come, the more that will respond, will become part of that committee of safety. You'll be growing leaps and bounds in that committee of safety as you move from the different school districts. I know here in Dutchess County, I believe we have 13 school districts, plus we have the colleges and universities, so we'd be visiting them too, and requiring them to be teaching certain things that they're not teaching. And prevent them from teaching things they shouldn't be teaching, like how to destroy America, you know, wokeism and all that craziness. So, but people need to know the process, and they, you know, and you'll grow quickly this way. And you know, by the end of the year, you could have 1,000 people, 500, 1,000 people in your committee of safety. The more, the merrier. Hey, the work you'll be able to do, the power you'll have, the authority you have, the control of your of the agencies within your county, within your state, and eventually, even on the federal level, because you know you have your representatives, and there's the senators, and so on and so forth, and there's state government. I mean, look at. People need to know how to do that. They need to know how the process works. They need to exercise it. Many hands make light work. What one doesn't know, the other one might. You know, one, you look at a lot of information. You have 40, 50 people coming together. You know, maybe no one person knows it all, but when you're looking, someone will know this and another one will know that, and collectively you have the answers. At least one person, and I would think many people, but one person, bare minimum, for each committee of safety, you should have someone who knows the law. We're talking about the common law. They should be taking the course. Everyone should be taking this course, in my opinion. This course should be taught in schools, and we're going to push for that. But you go to court access in the common law course, okay, you take this particular course, and that person who takes this course, or numerous people, they become the legal advisors to the people in the Committee of Safety in that county. And of course, they can always come to us here on Monday night meetings or the monthly meeting, whatever they want, to seek out answers and potential solutions that we may be able to offer to them, for them to exercise and execute within their counties, to have government by consent. So again, the people need to be active. They need to be educated. Don't haphazardly just do anything. You know, there are people trying to go do to form grand juries without an education. That's a wrongdoing. They'll do as much damage as the people they're trying to stop, and they don't even realize it. You know, you don't haphazardly, ignorantly go into something without looking into things and understanding what it is that you're doing. So education is the key. That's the key to the salvation of the United States of America.
John, speaking of education, have you seen Donald Trump talk about Agenda 47? Have you seen this yet?
No, I haven't.
He said something before about homeschooling, and they were going to fund homeschooling. But I saw him say something recently. It was one of the most heartwarming things I'd heard in a long time. Specifically, the part about suing all the endowments at the prestigious universities. He's going to sue them and take all their money. I just so delighted to hear that. Because all they do is teach communism, and they give these you know, leftist professors. I mean, their salaries are like $300,000. Anyway, he's going to take all their money, and he's going to provide free education, university that will, and you can transfer your credits if you're already in school, and you'll get an education for free, and you can get it in any field that you want, and it'll be top-level education. That's part of his Agenda 47. I just wanted to see if you'd heard about it. It really sounds amazing.
Yeah, well, education, you know, prior to our time, eighth grade was the limit, and it surpassed even to some degree college education. Anybody who's seen the matter of fact, we have it. Let me see where we have this copy. It should be on. Let me see. Can we start a committee of safety handbooks? Anybody who hasn't taken this test, you should take this test, and you'll see what an eighth grade education was back going into the turn of the century, coming into the 20th century. And here it is, the eighth grade test, 1895. Okay. That is on Start a Committee of Safety, handbooks, videos, and tools. And this is the page it's on. It's just a little bit down, eighth grade educational test. You should see what a real education is, okay? And this is really, this is a test in order to pass, your eighth grade. Now, we send our children to school for 12 years. And maybe that is appropriate. I think the reason why it can't be done in eight years is because teachers don't know how to teach. They don't have control, and they're not teaching morals. They're not laying things out in a proper way. And in any event, we need to teach teachers to teach. But maybe 12 years is good. At the end of 12 years, you should have your college education. Not necessarily striking for a particular thing, like to become some kind of a medical doctor or get your doctorate. That would require now going into a college or a university. But at least up through the 12th grade, education is free, and it should continue to be free. But I do think that if you have a certain grade level when you come out of the 12th grade, that education should be free. You know, I know people who want to go to college, kids who want to go to college, but they did horrible, didn't pay attention in the lowest, you know, when they were in the earlier grades. And so I don't know, but education to some degree should be free. It should, and it certainly shouldn't cost the amount of money it cost. So I like Trump's idea. That's a great idea. Given that free education, he also had pushed towards wherever you want to send a child to school, wherever you want to send them, the money should follow you. You know, you can get great private schools that cost a lot less money than what's being paid by the government to the public schools, which you get a garbage education from. So, you know, the money should follow the child. And that includes, and I know Trump talked about this, that includes people who want to homeschool so that the parent who is homeschooling will get the money, and they homeschool their children. So that's huge, and these are the kind of things we should be doing, and this is how we get a proper education. But a curriculum needs to be laid out. It needs to be laid out by the parents, by the people, and enforced by the people on the local level. And if they break their will, what they want, what they wish the education should be, then these people need to be removed. You know, every child should learn how to drive a vehicle, a car, in school. Every child should learn how to handle a weapon, a handgun, and a rifle. Every child should know all these things as much as any other subject. They should know about the militia. They should know their duties as far as what the duties are as a citizen of a particular state to the militia is. They should know about the Committee of Safety, how that operates, how to control the government, how to have government by consent. They should know all these things. Everything we're teaching here at NLA should be taught in schools, and by the time a person comes out of the 12th grade, they should have this complete and full education that we offer here. Now, we also have a higher education here. You know, we have all the great works and the great books. I mean, that brings you into a higher education, into the great conversations of the world over time. So anyway, anything else, David? We're done.
Hey, that's a good, you give me a lot of ideas. I appreciate it. I'm going to get working on this, get this organization going. And then I'll probably meet with King County and try to motivate them to put their committee of safety together.
And okay. Before you leave, David, I have a question. Did you say you were in Pierce County?
Yes, I'm in Pierce County.
Okay, when I went to look for you, I downloaded the Pierce County people, and you're not in there. Then I went back. I think you're still registered in King County. Can you go to your my account and change that?
Oh, so okay. I'll do that. I think you're right. And also, I noticed I had a fraudulent activity in my account, and you may not be getting that. I need to get that set up again.
Okay. Well, we appreciate your support.
Is your email current so I can send you the list of people in Pierce County?
Yes. It's David.
No, you don't have to give it. He's got it if it hasn't changed from what you signed up with.
Okay.
Yeah, if it's okay.
Yeah, I'll change that. Make sure you got the right email address also.
Okay, that'd be great. I'll get that right out to you then.
Hey, thank you. And Jan, thanks. I called you a couple of times. You answered questions for me, so I appreciate that also.
Okay, great.
Okay, thank you, David. We'll take our next caller now. Thank you.
Thank you, and I appreciate what you guys are doing. It's a blessing.
Thank you. Okay, Victor, what state are you from? You got the mic.
Yes, is this me?
We can hear you. What state are you from, Victor?
Yeah, Victor, California. I do have a couple of questions. One of them is, I believe I have completed all of the courses required for the administration, and I'm halfway through the foundational studies, and I would like to know how to go about getting a certificate or what my next step would be.
Okay, yeah. Just for everyone else to know, we have all our courses. We have, some of them are for free. Some of them you have to be a premium member, and one of them you actually have to pay for, which is the law course. Which is a complete law course. Once you take that course, you'll know how to get into the court, you know how the process works, go right through discovery and right into arguing your case and write your papers, I mean, everything. Of course, you'll be as good as much time you put into it. You got to put your time into it to be really good. If you want to practice law, you could learn enough from what we're teaching here to be able to go and practice law. Practicing law is a right, by the way. But what we're doing is we're establishing administrators for the juries in every county. There are 3,133 counties, and we need four individuals, which would be administrators for the jury, and one paralegal, which would also be an administrator too. They need to take the course also. And in order to do this, you have to take all the courses. Now, we haven't created a certificate yet. But if you go under Education Starts Here, you have to go under courses. You need to take the foundation course, the Constitution course 101, the civics course, government by consent course, the militia course, and then the jury administrative accredited course. Now, once you finish all those courses, and you could do it in any way you want, you also need to take...
I believe I have been completed all of them already.
Okay, but the other course that you have to finish is the court access and the common law course. This is probably the most important course. As a matter of fact, we might change this over and limit the necessity of all the other courses because the court access and the common law course probably covers pretty much everything you're learning in the other courses. And it adds to it, of course. But the thing is going through all the courses and then going through the court access common law courses, there's some redundancy there, but redundancy is important for an education. We learn through constantly going through things over and over and over again. We see it, we hear it, we read it, and we apply it. We see it, we hear it, we read it, and we apply it. And after a while, it becomes, regular... thinking in your mind the way things work, when you respond in a conversation, it kind of just falls off your lips because it's embedded in your brain from three different ways, hearing, seeing, and saying. So all those courses are required in order to become a jury administrator. Now, a jury administrator is a full-time job, 40 hours a week. It's a professional job. It's paid. And you get to work in the county you live in, or if the courthouse is closer to you in the next county over, maybe just going across the river and it's closer, you don't have to work in your same county. And the job of the jury administrator ultimately is to orientate the juries, okay, advise them with any questions and comments, any questions they might have, and advise them, lay it out. We're putting together a handbook for that, and we're putting together which I believe we already have, but videos. We have the two handbooks for one for the grand jury, one for the trial jury, which would be handed out. And we're going to create a PowerPoint by those handbooks, which I might have done. I don't remember. But in any event, orientation of the jury, you get 8 hours. That's the job of the administrator. The administrators are also the investigative body for the juries. Maybe someone comes to them with a problem, and they might make a few phone calls and may investigate whatever a situation, a problem with some bureaucrat that an individual within that county has with a bureaucrat. You're not getting the information they want, or whatever the case may be. Well, they become the investigative body, and they can also arbitrate the problems between an individual that's working in the government and one of the people of that county. And if they can't solve that problem, then they can pass that information on to whatever grand jury is sitting at the time and ask them to have an investigation, and they'd be able to go to the particular government office or whatever the case may be to investigate, ask questions, look into their computers, look through their books, see what's going on, and then command a solution. And if they refuse to command a solution, they have the opportunity then to decide whether they want to indict or not. So there's a force to be able to get the people, get the government government respond to the people correctly. So that's the job of a jury administrator. You have to have a proper education. We will be giving certificates out because it's required of us. We have a responsibility to do the right thing, to not just put anyone into positions that are not properly educated. In the beginning, of course, it'll be on-the-job training, and people will figure things out as they go, get advice from us, but they need to be following through with the education. We also have judiciary committee within the county that eventually will be an oversight to some degree, which I don't want to get into those details now, but to some degree there'll be an oversight to deal with particular problems that might surface. And when there's a vacancy, maybe someone retires or passes away or quits or whatever the case may be, well, it'll be up to that particular committee to help find a person that is qualified. They'd have to have a certificate, and that certificate would come from National Liberty Alliance at completion of courses. Now, we have not put together yet, and I am looking to do that. Hopefully we'll get someone to volunteer to help us with this. On the court access and the common law course, okay, underneath Education Starts Here. If you click on the table of contents, it gives you the contents of all the things that's being taught in this particular course, which is quite a bit. And we need to put a test together for this so that people can qualify for this particular job. People who take the course don't need to take the test, but if they want a certificate for taking the test, then you have to pass the test. We're giving this to sheriffs for free and giving it to deputies for free. So we'll be doing a campaign to get that information out to these people, sheriffs and deputies, that they can come for free education. And then if the sheriff wants them to be qualified by having a certificate, we'll provide that certificate. So anyway, it's just another thing LA is doing, but it's a necessity. Have you taken this particular course, the law course, court access and the common law course? Have you taken that one?
I'm really started it. I couldn't get it before because of a financial deal. Thank you for allowing me to do it for free. But I'm working really hard on it right now. I had a hard time with the last one, the accredited course. I had to do it twice. I've already finished it. And like I say, I'm working really hard on the other one.
Competitiveness is education also, so that's helpful. But if there was a problem where it's not working right, as long as you let us know, we'll try to fix that problem.
Okay. But I finished it already. So okay. Yeah, thanks for the information. I've been following you since the 2017, somewhere around there, and so I know a lot of the information that you're giving out. But thanks for reminding me of all of that. But the other quick question was that I'm having a hard time financially because of I don't know if you know anything about the child support thing. I was getting some money and they took a big old chunk of money from my deposit, and this month they only left me with a couple of $100, so it's not enough to even buy food. And so I was thinking that maybe you would know something about that program or how to, you know, fight them or, you know, keeping them from taking so much.
I don't understand. What's the situation?
My youngest daughter is 24, and they have been taking some money from my retirement account.
They get to that age, and they be on their own. You didn't have to be supporting them any longer.
That's correct, but this is arrears or whatever you call them, and they taking so much. They this month they took a lot more. They only left me with a couple of $100 in the account, and supposedly every month they're gonna.
Are you working? They garnish you the check, or are you on Social Security? They garnish you. What happened?
Yes, that is the Social Security or the retirement check.
There is a law that I think it's 15% is the maximum they can take from you. So you need to look into that and study up on that. Do a little research to find out. If you can go to Social Security. They're not too well organized and they're not too clear, so you have to kind of struggle through this. All these governments are the same way. They're not clear. But any event, you need to find out. Social Security generally across the board is the same, and I think it's 15% is the maximum they can take out of your monies. So you have to research out. Find that out. And then serve a notice to the Social Security that they're taking X amount of dollars. By law, you can only take X amount of dollars. You want them to, you know, repair this problem.
Well, what they say is that I have to talk to the Child Support Division directly. They can't do anything about it.
They're passing the buck back and forth. That's giving them power and authority to do whatever they please, but that's not the law. Social Security operates under a code, okay? Look up the U.S. code that controls them, okay? And you can find that here on this page here, Court Access and the Common Law. Let's see. You can find the U.S. code. We have a list of all the codes, and you can find them in here. These are general codes, but we do have a list of all the codes. But let me see if I can quickly find what controls Social Security. If you Google it or use some other search engine, I wouldn't use Google anymore. I don't use Google anymore anyway. what do I use? DuckDuck something, I don't know. Yeah, DuckDuck Go Search. But in any event, just Google it, the U.S. Code for Social Security or Social Security Law or whatever, something like that, and then look into that and you'll find out. Or you go to the website, because I think you'll find it on the website too. I'm working on a case right now that deals with Social Security, and if I know the percentages in there. If you ask me next week, maybe I'll see it when I'm working through the paperwork what the percentages, but I'm pretty sure it's maximum 15%.
Okay, then I will call you back next Monday.
What state did you say you were in again?
California. It's the worst.
All right. The other thing is, in order to garnish your income, they have to have due process, and you can go talk to the sheriff about that. I don't know how far you'll get with him because they're not too educated. But if he isn't educated, the sheriff, if he's got a copy of the book, Excellence, not Excellence, if he's got a copy of the book, Government by Consent, okay, which
yes,
lot of sheriffs. He may have one. Who knows? But if he's got a book, maybe he's getting educated, and that might be helpful. But first, you need to know how they did what they did. Where is the garnishment as far as the lien? How did they get the lien? How come I was never called in for due process? You just can't just go lien things. Governments do whatever the heck they want to do, and they're destructive. They definitely do not assist us, the people, in any way. Look what they did to Hawaii, you know?
Yes. Yes, sir. Well, thank you very much for information, and thanks for everything you're doing for us.
All right. Thank you, Victor.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, we'll take our next call. Gerard, you want to pick up the callers from here? Is he still here? Did Gerard leave? Let me see. Yeah, I think he left. All right, we'll take our next caller. Let's see. Looks like Maria from Illinois.
Oh, Illinois, Maria. Hello.
Yeah, your name is Maria, right?
From
Illinois.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes, yes. I have a book. I have both books, you know, Government by Consent and the Access, Call to Access. And I have these handbooks. I bought a lot of handbooks, you know, Committee of Safety handbooks. I started to read, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I read half of this already. And I have these common law handbooks for the grand jury and for the petty. And, you know, I'm also, I read the bill, your Bill of Rights book, you know, with the history background. It's very good.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm reading for the third time already these books, because it's important to you know, to have this put into their heads deeper. And, so what I wanted to say, I need to, I have the phone number, but my phone number, you know, I have so many calls, so I don't pick up the phones because I don't know the people who are calling me from different kinds of states. So I'm thinking, you know, to make another phone number, you know, just if the people will be interested to talk to me about the Committee of Safety. So because I would like to have the people who are interested and that I can talk to them, that we can talk in the group, so it will go much better. You know, I see, you know, I am with you, I think, maybe like 6 weeks or maybe like this. So, but I see the progress that I understand more and more. And even when I'm listening to you, so I pick up more things. So I am glad because I understand more already. So, and I like it. I like the topics, and I have the Black Dictionary, Black Law Dictionary also. Right. And
I'm
talking to some people about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I met one guy, you know, I talked to him. But there are some people, you know, I'm older. I am older and you know, I am more interested in reading because I know that I have to have a knowledge first, you know, to talk to the people. So to attract them or to influence them, I need to have the knowledge. And there are some young people who you know, take easily this. Maybe they don't understand that they, this is very important, you know, to focus first on an understanding,
right? Well, the
and building the relationship and, you know, meet each other. So, but what I say, you know, some people, you know, they have different approach. But you know, I met some people, I think twice, and I'm always first that I make a call. I try to communicate with people or to talk. So I'm just like a initiate. I always initiate. But that's, I noticed that if I will be more interested, if the people will look at me and I will be able to catch their attention an interest, so then I will be able to stir up, you know. I just said that I need to have a phone number, not a line, just only for this. So I never had like this, the second phone number, so I just need to go to the place where I have already the phone and ask them, you know, how to make another line. Or maybe there is another way.
Right. Well, if you put your phone number up on your, when you signed and you gave us your phone number, and especially if you signed up as starting to put together a committee of safety where people will contact you, you can just go in and change that number anytime you want and update anything you want, your phone or whatever. But let me respond to some of the things that you were talking about and you brought up. You know, you brought up the Black's Law Dictionary. You know, you can download that free. We do have a copy of that up on Court Access and the Common Law. Yeah, Law Dictionaries. We have three dictionaries. They're law dictionaries that you can download for free, two Black's and Bouvier's. I put the second one up there because the second one's a little older. It's back in 1910, and the later is 1968. And sometimes I use both of them just to see if there's much change or any change. They've been pretty consistent. They haven't changed much at all, really, between those years. But I know after 1968, they did start to change some things, the meaning of things. But anyway, that's free up there. I think we also have it under law. We have law dictionaries right here. We have it there, too, so you can download it. You don't have to be in the course. That was in the course that you can download. But you can download it if you're not in the course. And this page is available to everyone, and you can download those three dictionaries. The other thing brought up is the handbooks. You know, people don't have to go buy these handbooks. You know, they're all PDF download for free. I mean, you can download all these things. But if you want the handbooks, of course, then, you know, you can go and up to, you can go to this page here under Welcome Books by John Durash, and you can buy these all up on Amazon. These are the handbooks that are available up on Amazon right now. But again, you don't have to buy them. You can download the PDFs. But they are convenient for people, you know, you can stick it in your shirt pocket type thing or into your pocketbook or whatever, purse. So that's good. We have a lot of stuff up here, so, and just about most of it's all for free. All right, anything else, Maria?
For now, it's okay. Thank you very much that I'm able to talk and thank you very much for the knowledge. So,
get the call. Thank you. Hey, Gerard, do you want to take the last two callers? I don't know if anybody else wants to get into the queue. Gerard, you're back. You want to take the next few callers? Okay, we'll go to the next caller. 602, first name, that's the area code. What's your first name and your state?
It's Mark, Maricopa County, Arizona.
Mark from Arizona. Go right ahead, Mark.
Thanks, John. I spoke to you last week. Since then, I've been going through the website, and I believe I've gotten to the pleadings on Chapter 2. A lot of great information. This is absolutely wonderful. Just a little preface here. I've been semi-retired for about 3 years and going through this whole Patriot thing, website after website and whatnot, and I really like landing here and meeting the people. This is really great stuff. I want to get involved. I have a lot of time, but I currently have a present time problem. I mentioned this with you, I think, last week about I had these two attorneys that did this mortgage deed transfer fraud thing, and while it went through the Superior Court into the Appeals Court, they did conduct a non-judicial foreclosure and sold it to a couple real estate investors that filed a claim in Superior Court, landlord-tenant, went to the hearing, the judge threw me out before I even had a chance to speak, and signed a an eviction judgment. So I filed an appeal, and I'm trying to find a way to put a stop to this. And I've been going through the website. It's a lot of material to go through. And I'm just wondering, I'm on, let's see, the education starts here. The table of contents, or actually it goes down to the law, court forms, and it's instructions and forms to challenge jurisdiction, and then instructions and forms to move your case for cause. I'm not interested in really going to trial and pursuing this. It would take me too long. And I think the other attorneys have put forth a conditional stay that I pay them about $9,000 for back rent on the 27th. And I'm just wondering how, if I can go to court to put a stop to this or a stay on this type of thing. Because,
well,
I'm wondering if the challenge to the jurisdiction is going to be sufficient.
Right. Well, the problem is you're up against organized crime. And
right.
It doesn't stop at the local level, the state level. It goes all the way up to the federal level. And you could try to do things, but I don't think you're going to get anywhere with it at this point, like moving it to federal court for cause. It could find your time because you're not getting your due process.
Correct.
So that's a battle you can make, maybe tie them up in court. Look, we're all casualties of war. Okay?
Correct.
Every single one of us. And we've all been injured. We've lost things. The state owes us a lot. On the one hand, the problem is the state is us, ultimately. We take, it's our money we're taking back. But on the other hand, they've stolen so much money, and they've got so much property, so much funds, so much liquidity. They got gold, they got silver, they got property, they got all kinds of, all kinds of things, corporations and so on and so forth. And the New World Order, these people that are all guilty of this subverting of America, everything is going to be taken from them when justice finally comes. So we're talking seizing trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars, okay? Now, remember, we in America are not the only ones that have been injured by these people. This is a worldwide problem. So that
right.
money ultimately belongs to all of us, to all the people of the world. I think, the lion's share probably will come to America in the sense of, we've been putting out the most, been beaten up the most over 100 years. But look, we've all been injured, and there's a price to be paid. Common law requires for every injury there must be a remedy. And so at the end of the day, what I would do if I were you is, if I recall talking to you, you had a pretty large piece of property, you have a lot of equipment or a lot of things on that.
Correct.
You're apt to lose all of that stuff. The one thing is, if you had to pay them to work with them, a lease agreement with that, is that something you could do, at least keep you afloat and continue an income?
I suppose I could. However, it's there was a lower court, Supreme Court case where I filed for an injunction to stop these guys. And I even got a letter from the bank stating there was no foreclosure, and the judge ignored it and didn't do anything. So I took it to the appeals court, and it's been sitting there for 6 months, and they won't do anything.
Well, look, remember, again, you have to understand our system, how things work. And if you brought it into an appeals court, have you perfected your paperwork on that? You have made an appeal, so you served notice of an appeal, and you made a general declaration of what it's about to some degree, but it's usually very short. Then after that, you have to then collectively, I don't know, have you done this? Have you pulled all the necessary information that you want to work into the appeal together and apply?
We went through the initial briefing, the reply brief, and the other final brief, and it's been sitting there for a little while.
Okay, well, you got to move things. You got to move the court now. Do you have a wherefore clause? And did you have a wherefore clause? Have you pushed the court for a wherefore clause? I mean,
no, I didn't. Was not aware of all this stuff until probably last week. So I've been plowing through this, and it's a lot of data to sort out and figure out what is my best plan to go with.
Well, see, that's one of the problems. Look, if you go to law school, I don't know how many years it takes to become a lawyer. 2 or 3 years, I think. Potentially, I guess. I really don't know. But in any event, you know, our course is 90 hours, and if you ran that through so many hours a week over a course of time, it's quite a few years. Of course, you have the opportunity to zoom through it. You know, some people can go through things very quickly, and but repetitiveness is the key, because memory comes with repetitiveness. Constantly reviewing and looking back, and you know, handling and doing and saying and thinking, and you know, just putting a lot of time in it. And that's how you become good at anything in life anyway. But it does take time, and it's not going to be done overnight. Considering it's a 90-hour course, you can reasonably do it in 6 months, you know, and to be able to digest it. Again, some people may be able to do things quicker. One of the things I've learned, look, if you go through the course, which is a video course, as you know, and you go through that whole course and you come to the end, you got all the MP3s, which is identical. It just doesn't give you the video. So you've already got it in your mind's eye already. You'll remember when you listen to the audios. And when I want to learn something, especially if I have audios, like I've done a course in law a while back, which was a lot simpler than what we laid out, of course, and it didn't cover common law. And there's a lot of things they didn't cover, but it gave me some basics. It gave me a little structural understanding of how the system works. But I took those tapes and I listened to them over and over and over and over again. Also, Bill Thornton stuff, you know, and he covered a lot of the common law, but he's got some flaws in that. But, you know, you can ignore the flaws once you learn them. And if you take our course and then you go through Bill Thornton stuff, you'll start to see the few contradictions, so you'll know the corrections that need to be made. One of the big errors that Bill Thornton makes is that he claims you to be the king of the court. You're not the king of the court. Jesus Christ is the king of the court. And the jury is the king's bench. They're to represent the will of the king. And so the will of the king is justice, and that's how American courts are really structured. And so that's a very important point to be made and understood in a court of law. You are not the king. You don't make the final decision. And that could be a problem if you tried to exercise that in that way. And also the people will look at you strange, I think, anyway. But in any event, it does take time. You're not going to do it overnight. Anybody that puts 6 months real hard work into it could become a very good lawyer through this court. If you take longer, that's fine. Some people may be able to do it quicker. So there's two things that I can suggest for you. Number one, I would definitely take an account. You probably already have an account of everything that you could potentially be lost here, as far as your property is concerned, the selling of all the equipment and materials that you have on the property. That's number one. So you want to make a good documentation of that. You also want to make documentation of everything that took place in the court. You want to get all the records and everything, pull that together. Because you see, at the end of the day, when we get to the other side of devolution, which definitely will be less than a year at this point, because it'll be the worst case to be done around election time, the finalization when the military moves in. I think it's going to happen before that, but I don't know when. But when that happens, and we take the courts back, and then we'll be filing papers in the courts and going to the JAG here, for the probably the Army JAG, and deal with a problem with them as far as the federal judiciary is concerned, because our focus is to turn the courts back to the courts of law again and to get rid of all of these repugnant laws and rules that they put together. So we'll be working on that end on the one hand, okay? And justice and compensation will come on the other hand. You potentially, if you can afford to pay the whatever you want to call it, but it certainly really isn't rent or anything, it's really extortion. If you want to pay and build that case, that's the case I would build, extortion. So you get all the information you need to win the case and think about winning it in a year. Meanwhile, you've got a lot of time to learn. You can continue your business. You have to pay the extortion. You keep an accounting, and when you go back, you know, you can go back for maybe six times, or I forget the biblical principle. I think it's five is the maximum biblical principle. So if you had to pay extortion, let's say $100,000, and over a period of time, well, you have a right to go back five times that, okay? Plus, there's other injuries. That's just the economic injury that you've received. There's also, mental, injury that you received. You've got to calculate and figure all that out. So now is a time of education, potentially paying the extortion fee in order to continue your business as long as you can uphold that, and then worry about it about a year from now, take them into court. It should be a slam dunk at that point.
And I understand all that. I'm just I've been here 25 years,
yeah.
And I had my land patent filed at the recorder's office a year and a half ago.
Well, and you might be able to go into the federal court on this issue if you think you can do it. Again, you got to understand how things work. How far are you into the course?
Well, I watched I went through at the, let me get my mouse here, the common law course. I watched all the videos, and, let's see, I'm on Chapter 2, Pleadings Part D.
Okay, so you still have a lot to go through.
Right.
Have the fundamentals of the common law already in you, and that continues through the whole process anyway. But now it's the due process. You're working how to write the pleadings and the cause of action, and piling your affidavits and your evidence, what kind of defense you make. All got to prepare for all the motions that are coming up. You have to understand all that. Memorandums of law is a lot of good stuff on memorandums that we put together. You may not need many of these, but I'm sure there's some in there. Or you can strip out information because we have this in Word, and I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I downloaded all that stuff.
Yeah, because now you can cut and paste, different things within these memorandums.
So sure.
There. So, you could, if you think you can get through the system on the case, I would work towards that appeal, find out what's going on. Why don't you call the clerk up and ask what's going on with your appeal? And they may say, well, hey, look, you haven't moved it. What is it that you have to do to move? They may answer you. They don't like to give legal advice. But
right.
Missing, they could tell you. If you file papers, and for instance, we just did this, Gerard and I, and we failed to put on his particular case, we failed to put a notice of motion on it. And the clerk said, you need a notice of motion. So that's not really legal advice. It's just a specific thing that's necessary, a piece of paper that needs to be filed with it. So you need to find out what's preventing it from going forward. It sounds like you have a case you might be able to win through the appeal, and then if you have to, you can move it into federal court for cause, for denial of due process, because the judge is not giving you the law. He's not applying the law.
Well, in the appeals court, they denied a temporary restraining order, and they just simply denied it. They didn't give a reason. They just denied it. So I thought about moving it to the federal court because it is a constitutional.
It's got to be for cause, and the only argument you can make is for cause. And if you can prove that they haven't given you due process, and they can't prove that they did give you due process, your wherefore clause could be for them to cease and desist, and it brings them back to square one.
Well, I printed out. I have whiteboards in my entire house, in my office, and I printed out all the paperwork and set it all up in sequential order, and I'm going through everything. A lot of stuff to go through that whole situation.
Why don't you digest some of the things we spoke about, and maybe we'll talk again next week, try to get on a little earlier, because we're past 11 now, and we do have one other caller in here.
Okay. One last thing. Should I try and focus on moving it to the federal court for cause of lack of due process, because I think I got most of the paperwork set up for that?
You can prove that, yes. You have to lay it out, and you have to be very careful with your paperwork. You want to lay it out in such a way. One of the things they're going to do, let me think about it. What court level are you in? I forget. Are you in the state court or county court?
Yeah, I was in the Maricopa County Superior Court. Two cases through there, then the Arizona Appeals Court. And they denied a temporary restraining order. They just simply denied it. Okay. I thought the paperwork.
Well, let's talk about it next week some more if you want, but due process is the key, you know, and you want to go and you've got to be very specific on it, and that's the only argument you're making in federal court. You're not arguing anything else, that they seizing your property without due process. And you have to prove that they didn't give you due process, or you have to prove that they did, or to admit that they didn't. And how you do your paperwork and, you know, on your original pleading as you move into the federal court is you do certain questions you want to ask them on that pleading that they have to respond to, and really you're trying to trap them. One noun, one verb per sentence. I mean, just write it like a child would write. You don't write it in paragraphical forms. You have one question. You want to be very clear. It may take 5 or 6 or 7 questions to get the whole picture of what you're really looking to have them to say. But anyway, if you can get them to say the right things, you could do a summary judgment immediately. And it shouldn't be any more than a summary judgment anyway. It should end up that way in the federal court. But you're in there for cause. They're just looking for the violation. It's not going to go to a jury. Just looking for the the violation of a right. And that's it. Cease and desist is the order you want, and that's it.
Because I did request a trial in this eviction case, and the judge denied it.
Okay, that right there is your denial, right there. And what you would apply on that is the Seventh Amendment. And let me look it up here to read it to you. Amendment 7, in suits of common law where the value of controversy shall exceed $20, it's worth more than $20, the right, it's an unalienable right, this isn't just nice to have, no, it's a right, it's the unalienable right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact by jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. You see, this brings the whole court system into the rules of common law. It brings it into right of jury. That's where it fails. Now, did you write a paper and put it in to tell them that you're demanding a trial by jury?
I did.
Okay, there's your proof.
Right.
And they denied it. They can't deny it. It's a right. So that you can make that case. There's what you want to argue. We could talk more next week if you want.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody. It's been fantastic.
All right. Okay, we're going to take a last caller. Ross, you got the mic. How you doing, Ross? Ross, are you there? Your mic is off if you're not, if you're there.
I'm here.
How you doing?
Yes. Do I, sign pick to be a joint administrator? Why is that? Because you have to have the community safety set up first before you report it in?
Well, no. Basically, now is the time for education and preparation. I'll be working on, I just haven't had the time yet to do it, but I'll work on a certificate for this, for those people who have, took all the courses, so they have a certificate. And we have to win the battle. We have to get to the other side of devolution, win the battle to bring a common law back into the federal courts that automatically roll right down into every state. And that's when we'll push forward to take control, the people take back control, not to take control for the first time, to take it back. Courts of law is always to be run by the people. No bureaucrat should be running a court of law, okay? Only they have a magistrate, acts as a traffic cop, and the people make the decisions, the jury, and that's the way it's supposed to go. So we need to bring common law back, but once we get that, but now is the time of education. You have to educate, and I know you're doing that, so keep working.
I completed all the courses, and also the course of the court access of the common law. Mm-hmm. I complete that. So.
Okay, we'll be putting. I'd like to get someone to help us to really put a test together. If anybody wants to volunteer to do that, we'll give them access into the court and But we need someone with a little bit of experience, the ability to be able to, work through it and ask good questions. It'll be multiple choice questions. And once we can get a test put up, then we'll have that. But that's not a requirement right now. Again, I know you've taken all the courses that shows up on our website. Access into this course shows up on our website, so we know that you've taken the courses or are in some of these courses. We know where you're at. But at some time in the future, we will look to qualify people through a test. And people will have the opportunity to take the test as many times as they want in order to get through it. And they can continue to work as a jury administrator. At least in the beginning, it'll be very flexible because you need to fill these positions. People with a reasonably good education, even though it's not complete, got enough exposure to common law, and common law is common sense anyway. It's the procedure that you really want to work on. But the thing is you still would be qualified much more than any bar attorney and any judge would be who now handles bringing in and the jury and orientating the grand and the petit juries.
Okay. Because I'm waiting for that, because I hope that will be soon.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a little while yet. It's some. You look at, we have to get past evolution before we begin anywhere. Once we get past evolution, I don't know, it could take months maybe to get through the system to get everything back in order. I don't know. I don't know what we'll be up against, what will be left in the court system, especially at the federal level when all these people are arrested. Bear in mind, every single judge is guilty. All these federal judges are guilty, okay, and of subversion because they have applied the rules. And when you tell them, they know what they do. So this is it's going to be a mess for a while.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Okay.
I've got to bring things to Ross. Appreciate the call.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for coming. Lord willing, we'll see you next Monday. And anybody coming to our Bible study, we'll see you on Wednesday. Good night, everybody.